Avmina is a beautiful mitzvah that we have the opportunity to fulfill on Sukkos. And it's an area where a lot of times there is some degree of confusion, especially if you're picking out your own minim. I don't know, for some of you, maybe this is the first time you're ever picking out your own stuff. So what exactly do you need to be aware of? What are you looking for? What's called mehudar? What's called kasher? What is really a problem? So let's go through some of the basic halachas. We'll start with the Yesrog. People often pay most attention to the Yesrog, so we may as well start there. So, Esrog. Okay. First thing you need to make sure is that it really is an Esrog. So there's something called Murkav. This. What's Murkav? No.
Crossbreed,
right. The Esrog happens to be a very delicate fruit. So it's so people came up with a great idea: if we crossbreed it, so then we can help it be a little more sturdy. And in fact, that works. The only problem is then it's Murkav, and you cannot necessarily use it for the mitzvah. So the first thing is you have to make sure that what you're getting is an actual Esrog. So the best thing is to really buy your Esrog from a reliable source. That should come from an orchard that has a heksher on the orchard, that this is a real orchard of actual esrogim. You can look at the esrog itself also and get a little bit of a sense. There are simanim, you know, of an esrog as opposed to other fruit. It's bumpy, and this is called the oketz over here. It's a little bit sunk into the actual pre. In theory, if you didn't need to use it for the mitzvah, which is the whole point, of course, you could cut it open and see how thick the peel, thank you. It's much, much thicker than a regular citrus fruit, a lemon, let's say. Okay, so that's the first thing. You're going to want to make sure that you're getting a real esrog, an actual esrog. Okay, when we're talking about what the esrog actually, you're looking at the esrog and you're looking for, what are you looking for exactly? So you're looking for imperfections, for spots. So what exactly are we looking for? And where's the most important part of the esrog in this regard? So where's the most important part of the esrog in this regard? What's that?
The top third, the slope.
Okay, well, the slope and the top third are not necessarily the same. It depends on the esrog. But you're right. There's something called the chotem. That is where the esrog starts to slope. In this esrog, it's pretty high. It's actually much less than a third. It's right over here. It's pretty wide all the way till here. And then it slopes in towards the top. So this is a pretty small chotem on this esrog. Some esrogim start sloping much earlier. Okay, so that is going to be the most critical part of the esrog. So on the chotem, if you have even one spot, which is a puzzle type of a spot, then that will in fact puzzle the esrog. What is a puzzle spot? What kind of spot is a puzzle spot? So, okay, red, there's a discussion about red. Black. White, these are puzzle spots. Now, sometimes you're going to have a little bit of a black spot, but it's really just a speck of dirt.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like the rare, excellent example of a henbek.
Ooh.
Very rare.
Shkoy.
Very puzzle.
Okay, thanks. Oh, it's very close. Okay, we'll get to that. Good. So if it has a black spot, a white spot anywhere on the chotem, it's going to be a problem. Let's say it's not on the chotem; it's lower down in the esrog. So then it depends. If it's huge, well, you're not going to see that. So that's going to be a problem. If not, so if there are multiple spots scattered across the esrog, so that you can't see them when you're looking at it from one side, so it covers the majority of the circumference of the esrog, then it'll be a problem. Otherwise, if it's all on the same side, or if it's just one spot, a small spot, so then it is kosher nonetheless. Now, most esrogim have something called, in Yiddish, bletlach. Bletlach are like these beige things. Usually they're like a line, or they could be like a spot. It's not black, it's not white. It's usually like beige or light brown. So this is, what's that?
Like a scar tissue kind of thing?
Oh, so what it is, right, is that even though the peel is very thick, it is also very sensitive. So what happens is when the esrog gets scratched, it scabs. And that's what we call a these bletlach. This is not a problem. It does not passel the Yesrog. Obviously, it's very it'd be very nice if it didn't have it, if it's totally clean. Wow, beautiful. But it does not passel the Yesrog, even if it's on the Choten. The exception is, this is a dispute, but the possible exception is if it's raised, if it's bletlach which are raised above the skin of the Yesrog, so that if you run your finger over it, you can feel it, even without looking at it. So then that, according to many, has the same status as one of the problematic spots, and that would certainly want to be avoided in the Chotem, and you think twice about it. How intense do you have to get? Sometimes you see pictures of people with microscopes, and you know. So that's not really necessary, al pi halacha. The way that you look at it is you hold it at a normal distance that you hold fruit. You look at it like this. You give it once over, turn it around, and that's it. Whatever you see, you see. Whatever you don't see is not a problem. If you have to start staring at it in order to find something, then that doesn't really count. It does not take into consideration and does not pass on your esrog. Even if once you find it, then if you go like this and then you go like this, you can see it because you're looking for it. It doesn't matter. Okay? The only thing that counts is when you're holding it at a normal distance and you look at it, paying attention, but not staring too much, overly. So then, so just look at it in a normal way. That's what it means. You look at it in a normal way, like you look at a fruit. So then whatever you see is taken into consideration. Whatever you don't see, unless you really stare at it, is not taken into consideration. So far, so good?
Like red dots on the middle of it, not on the Chotem, what would be the problem? Would that be okay?
I've never seen red dots on Esrog personally.
Then black. What do you usually see? Black dots.
Yeah, you see brown, white, black.
And is that so? Brown on the
beige
would be okay.
Brown is okay unless it's dark brown, so it's almost like black.
On the Chodem though.
Yeah, it's fine.
And then even on the main thing, if there's it'd be okay unless it's, you said it's like an inch already.
Unless it's very large or there are multiple ones spread out over the course of the Esrog. Okay. Good.
If there's any black dot
on the Chotem, black dot is a problem on the Chotem. The the part of the Esrog that gets a lot of attention in the consciousness of many people is the Pitum. What is the story with the Pitum? Who normally gets an Esrog with a Pitum? Without a Pitum?
Oh, I usually get a Pitum. What's the difference?
With the pieces.
This thing on top.
Yeah, I know.
It sticks out. Okay, so you'll see a lot of, in Eretz Yisrael, I think it's more common that they sell esrogim without pitums, but they have with pitums also. So what's the deal with the pitum? What's the deal with the pitum? So if the pitum falls off while the fruit is growing, that's totally part of the normal growth process of some types of esrogim, and that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. If the esrog is fully matured and picked and has its pitum on, and then afterwards it falls off, so then there's what to talk about. So then exactly, it depends exactly what happens. You see, the pitum really, in the most circumstances, is made up, here's the fruit, and there's like a little stick that sticks off out of the fruit, like a wooden stick, and then there's a ball on top. The ball on top is called the shoshanta. So how much of your pitum is missing? So if the little ball is missing, or part of it is missing, it's still kosher. Obviously, if the whole thing is intact, that's great. That's wonderful. But if it's just the ball on top, it would still be kosher. If part of the stick is missing, so then there are already different opinions about this. And certainly if the whole thing is missing, to the point that there's like a hole in the top of the Yesrog, so then definitely that would be a problem. If part of the stick is still there, sticking up above the Yesrog, then definitely after the first day, it would still be kosher. So a person goes, I've seen people, second, third day, they drop their esrog, the top of the pitum falls off, and they go, oh, it's finished, it's done. That's not true. As long as it's after the first day and part of the stick is still above the top of the esrog, then you'll be fine.
Can you say after the first day, if it falls off again?
As long as part of it is still sticking up above the top of the esrog, okay? And how do you know? If it never had an esrog, if it fell off while it was growing, like a pitum, or if the guy who was selling it to you dropped it 2 minutes ago, how do you know? So, I guess, well, it's something you have to, I guess you're trusting to a certain degree, Sometimes, here in this case, it's interesting because this one doesn't have a pitum, but it does have a little part of the woody part on top of the fruit. So there are those who are makil in that such a circumstance, even if it would have fallen off afterwards. So if you're buying from someone you trust, then, you know, taking that into consideration also, I wouldn't be so worried. If there's no wooden part over there, so if it fell off while it was growing, it will usually be covered by a scabby type of a thing. So if it looks like a fresh cut there, then, you know, that would definitely raise the alarms. Color of esrog in general, overall color. So yellow,
green
is okay, not red, thank you. Green is fine. If it's a lighter green, if it's a darker green, if the whole thing is like a darker type of a green, which is not so common but could happen, so then that would be questionable. You'd have to figure out if it will start turning color. But I think that's not really going to be much of a problem. So lighter green, yellow, that would totally be great. Obviously, in terms of hiddur, so if it looks nice, if it's in good shape, etc., so then that's in the realm of hiddur. Okay.
Do they yellow with time? Is it like a banana?
They could yellow with time. Different people have different home remedies for making it, you know, yellow. If you're interested, we can talk after. Okay. Any questions so far? There's other things, but in terms of the practicalities, I think this is... Okay. One general issue, before I forget about it, with regard to the Dalaminim in general, is that there's a difference between the first day and other days. On the first day, what's the difference? Anybody know? Or a difference?
You have to have your own.
Okay, good. What are you going to say?
Well, it says you look after them, so we're only obligated to have our own on the first day.
Okay, so really, you're right. Very good. Both of you are right. So on the first day of Sukkot, the mitzvah of Dal Minim is Minat Torah. And after that, it's Midrabbanan. And when the Rabbanan made this mitzvah, so they made some differences between the mitzvah of Minat Torah on the first day and the mitzvah of Midrabbanan on the rest of the days of Sukkot. So one difference, you're right, is that the mitzvah of Minat Torah, the Pasuk says, Lukachtem Lochem, so it has to be Lochem, it has to belong to you, it has to be yours. So that's just something to keep in mind. I think that it would be very much a important idea for you all to have your own set of Dalaminim. In theory, if a person does not have his own set of Dalaminim, if there's someone in your family who doesn't have, or whatever the case may be, and you're lending him your Dalaminim, so then it would, in order to fulfill the mitzvah on the first day, a person has to understand that he's giving it to him as a gift, that it's his, while he's using it, and then he's going to give it back to you as a gift. After the first day, a person could be yotze with borrowed minim. Yeah.
Could you like buy between two people?
Shutfus. And it belongs to both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good enough. Shutfus. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. I remember. I recommend you guys should have your own. Yeah, you guys are big boys now. I think you should have your own. Down meeting. This way, you could also. Part of the Indian is to be able to do the Nanuim during Hallel. I think it's highly recommended that you should have your own Dalmin. Let's talk about Lulav. Okay. So Lulav. So basically, a person should try to make sure that his Lulav is more or less straight. Okay. If it's recognizably bent, significantly recognizably bent in one direction, so that could be a problem. If it's bent towards you, what's towards you? So this... Right over here, see this part? This is the spine of the lulav. This is called the shadra. It is the spine. This is what you hold facing you. If it's bent towards the spine, so it's not really possible. If it's bent in a different direction, it is possible. If it's noticeable, if it's significant, abnormal. Okay, how long does your lulav have to be? These lulav are pretty long. They don't have to be this long. How long does it have to be?
Four
tefachim. But four tefachim really should be four tefachim of shedra. The spine doesn't go all the way up. So here's the spine. The leaves of these are leaves over here. See this? This is a leaf. They come out of the spine. The spine only goes till, in this particular lulav, till here. After that, it's all leaves that are just sticking up. So it really should be four tefachim of spine. And the hadasim and aravos, which have to be at least three tefachim each. So the Hadassah and Aravos should come There should be a tefach worth of spine above the top of the hadassim and the aravos. Some people put their hadassim and aravos all the way on top. So it should be a tefach of a spine over there, and the hadassim a little higher than the aravos. What are you looking for? What is the main part in terms of the kashrus of a lulav? Why did Bitzal come in here and say that this lulav is puzzle? So the top. So there's something called the tiyomis. What is the tiyomis? If the tiyomis is split, then it's puzzle. So the mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch paskins that this refers to the tops of the leaves. Just to understand this, a leaf, here's a lulav leaf. Here's a lulav leaf. And you see that a lulav leaf is actually doubled over. Here, we can open it up. And these are actually two separate leaves here. Each one, if you'd open it up, it's two parts which are folded over on itself like this. And it can split. It can open up like this. Okay, they can come apart. They can detach. So, according to the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch, Tiyomis refers to the tops of all the leaves on top. If most of the tops of all the leaves in the lulav are split, it's going to be puzzle. Otherwise, even if the middle one is split, it's kosher. That's according to the Mechaber. The Ramah paskins, no. It all goes by the middle, top, middle leaf. So the top middle leaf is the key. If it's closed, attached, together, you're good to go. If it's open, if it's split, so then it depends. It depends how it's open. So if it's open in a way which the tops of the leaf face different directions, like this, so it looks like it's two separate leaves, that's called a himnak. It's not on the board. Himnak. So that, in fact, is automatically puzzled. That's what Bissau claimed is the case in this lulav. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe. Okay, could be. So that's a himnak. What's that? That's a himnak and that's puzzle. Let's say they're not facing in different directions. Oftentimes, the top leaf is a little bit separate. You can see, but both parts of the leaf are facing upward. They're not facing out. They're both facing upward. It's just detached. So the halacha is that if it's detached all the way down to the top of the spine, that's pretty far down. That's all the way down till here. From the top all the way over here, that's definitely puzzle. If it's detached most of the way down, it's also puzzle. If it's detached just a little bit, really it's still kosher, as long as it's not facing out in different directions. So the best thing is, most wonderful, is if it's totally closed. And then you know it's not going to open further. Okay? Totally closed, that's the best. If it's a little bit open, as long as it's not facing in different directions, really, in truth, it's kosher, as long as it's not split most of the way down to the top of the shedra, of the spine. So far, so good? Yeah? Yes.
This alone has like a lot of brown
stuff. Okay, brown stuff, yeah. Brown stuff is called kora. That's this brown stuff. And it's fine. It doesn't make the, it certainly doesn't affect the basic kashrus of the lulav. Okay, in theory, if you have your lulav from last year, so it does change color over the course of time, it's dried out, and that would be a problem. But any of the lulav you're going to buy now, this is lulav, a very fresh lulav, nice and green. It just has brown stuff on it. This brown stuff is not really part of the lulav, and it's totally fine. What there is to discuss is as follows. You started to mention that it's closed. It doesn't let it shake. So Sephardim actually prefer it that way. They like it that way in Sephardim. So you guys like it with this kora, and it's, whether it has a kora or not, they like it for it to be closed. And like totally solid. Ashkenazim like it for there to be a little bit of a, ruffle. Yeah, they prefer the ruffle. It's totally kosher without it. Totally kosher. But if they're talking about hither already, they prefer a little bit of the rustle.
Why?
When they do it. Nanuim, for the Nanuim. It's for the when you wave it around during hollow. Okay? Very good. What's that?
It's like a weapon.
Okay. Okay, now sometimes you see a lulav, which on the very top, the leaves like sort of twist down. Or it's twist sort of to the side like that. Right? Have a little kneppel, they call it. So, what's the status of that? So, if it actually, the leaves actually twist down, so then, for Sephardim, that's fine. And for Ashkenazim, they prefer that does not do that. If it's not totally straight, but doesn't really bend down, just bends over like that, but not down, just like this, so then that's okay, even for Ashkenazim. Okay, any questions about lulav?
Rabbi, when you said that the leaves are split, and then it was like all the way down to the spine, and it's bad.
Yeah.
It's like.
I think it's very unusual to find that. I don't know if I've ever found it. Or split all the way down to this.
So let's say, is it okay?
If it's just a little bit split on top and it's facing the same direction, it's not facing out in different directions, it really is kosher. Totally kosher.
Up until what point, though?
Majority of the way from the top to the spine. So here's from the top to the spine. So if it's till here.
Oh, majority of the way.
Okay, then that's the issue. Okay, if it's just split a little bit on top, you can even glue it together in theory and make sure it doesn't split the rest of the way.
Oh, you're allowed to glue it.
You're allowed, yeah. Okay, best thing is, in terms of hiddur, you get one which is closed on top, and I don't think it should be so much of a problem to find it, so. It's like a rare thing that's closed on top.
It's called humna?
If it's split in different directions, it's called himnak. Himnak. Okay? So far, so good. Hadasim! You all know what hadasim is, right? Or, yeah. You know, okay. Good. So, what do we need to know about hadasim? So we want, so the Torah describes hadasim as, what does the Torah say? What does the Torah say about hadasim? How's it called hadasim? Priyas hadar is the esrog. Keep going. Alright, never mind. Anaf eight avot. That's with an ayin. Avot, what does that mean? So that means that in common usage they call it mishulash. That, avot really means that the leaves cover the branch. The leaves stick up from the branch, and it covers the actual branch. You're going to want to make sure that they are mishulash, which means that from the same point on the branch, you have three leaves from the same height that come off the branch. Okay, sometimes you'll see that two leaves come off the branch, and then a little lower, the third leaf comes off the branch. So that's not called mishulash. Mishulash means that you have to have three leaves coming from the same height of the branch. The best thing is, ideally, that the entire minimum length of a hadas should be mishulash. It doesn't have to be straight, consecutive, but usually once it starts not being mishulash, then it's hard to find mishulash after that, but or at least harder. But what's the minimum length of a hadas? Three tefachim. So you should have three tefachim of mishulash. Or at the very, very, very least, the person has to have the majority of three tefachim, which are mishulash. So I don't expect that it should be so hard to, so complicated to find that.
That's okay though. The
what?
Majority? That's okay with kosafila?
Look at kilo, it should be the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay? That's a look at chila. The whole thing, the whole shear of three tefachim. Arabos. Again, I was hadassim, arabos, lulav, all of them. You can't have the top of it being clipped off. Now, that's, I hardly ever see that, but in theory that could be an issue. The arabos, you're not going to buy today because the arabos dry out very quickly. So you're going to buy them today, they're probably not going to be so good once you get to Sukkos, if they're going to be good at all. The dry out quickly, you may have to even replace your arabos at some point over the course of Sukkos. Best thing is to buy from somebody you have some sort of indication that he's a legitimate, guy. Sometimes people cut arabos where they don't belong and stolen, and that's not good. But you'll see arabos being sold all over the place once you get close to Sukkos. So you make sure you get your arabos. The three minyan, the lulav, hadasim, and arabos need to be bound together before yontiv. Before yontiv, you need to put it together. Okay, oftentimes people get a holder, and they put the hadasim and the arabos in there, and they put the lulav, and yeah, you get rings. Different people have different minhagim about that. Most people put three. You have two rings on the lulav and one ring that goes around all of them, and that is a hiddur mitzvah, and that's called eged, like the bus company. How much are you going to want to spend on your dal minim? So, people sometimes go a little overboard with the union of dal minim spending, although prices in America are much more expensive than they are here, I think, for the most part. But the halacha itself gives a guideline when it comes to the union of hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur mitzvah is a general ideal in mitzvahs. We want to do mitzvahs in the nicest way possible, the most beautiful way possible, and part of that, like any other mitzvah, when it comes to mitzvah of dal minim, we want to do it in the nicest way possible. So, and even more so by Dal Minim, because the Torah actually refers to the Ezra as pre-eights. Hadar, Hidr, right? So certainly Hidr Mitzvah is an important inyan. Nonetheless, there's no need to necessarily go overboard. The Halacha says, Hidr Mitzvah Ad Shlish. What does that mean? That if you could spend 10 shekel and buy a kosher set of Dal Minim, so, and you're willing to spend more, I don't think you could do that for 10 shekel, but you're willing to spend more in order to fill a mehudar way, so the halacha doesn't expect you to spend more than an extra third. So, yeah. So, beyond that, anything you want to spend beyond the third more than what you could spend to fulfill the mitzvah on a basic level, that's not expected, and it's your own cheshbon. Oftentimes, people spend lots and lots of money. If they want to, they can. They can buy the most beautiful esrog they can find. Okay? But it's not expected. Expected is for hiddur mitzvah ad shlish. Person can't afford it, so you can fulfill on the basic level. That's also fun. Fulfill the mitzvah. Okay? So hiddur mitzvah ad shlish. Beyond that, it's your own interest, your own cheshbon. Okay? Any further questions? Yeah?
Can you give us like an approximation of like costs?
I don't know. I'm not up on the cost. You go there, you'll see what the costs are. Yeah. Aravot. I don't have much to say about aravos. Make sure that not too many leaves have fallen off. Once a lot of the leaves fall off, you already got a problem. You're gonna need to replace them. The leaves should not be too serrated. If it's too serrated, that indicates that it might not be an arava. They should be long and narrow. Okay, long and narrow. You know what aravos leaves look like, I hope. Here's a picture. Somewhere. There you go. If you see that the stem is sort of reddish, that's a good sign. If it's not, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's possible, but it's a good sign if it is. No, not the leaves. The leaves are not red. But the stem is here, the stick, the branch. The leaves are not red. They're green.
Let's say there's only a minority of leaves in the store.
No. Once the majority of the leaves fall off, you got a problem.
Okay.
Try to keep your leaves on. Personally, I always switch my aravos at least once, if not twice, over the course of Sukkot. Because the leaves fall off and they get dried out, and they're cheap anyway.
You tell me there's packets with like a texture on it sometimes.
Yeah,
makes it a little better. They just gave us like kids running around on the
toes. I guess so. I mean, it's nice if we. People can fake Hashem. Also, unfortunately, every year there's like something on the news about something, whatever. But yeah, I guess so. It's also usually vacuum packed, so this way it'll stay fresh. You can put it in the fridge, so that's good. That's an advantage.
What about watering them? Like, putting them in the fridge.
Everyone's got their own shtick on how to keep them, from drying out.
There's nothing wrong with
extend the lifespan by an extra 3 hours or so.
There's nothing wrong with like watering them. I'm saying
repot them.
On Yom Tov, you can stick them back into the water. If they were already in the water, you can stick them back into the water.
They weren't in the water. It's like before, let's say you have like all the bags, and then you put them in the fridge to keep them fresh, and you just put a little bit of water from the sink. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know, I'm not really understanding.
You pour a little water on them when you're not using them.
You're pouring water on them? I don't
into
think pouring water on them.
Into
the bag?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. If it was, I don't think if it was in water already before, then you can stick it back. If it was not in water already, stick it to water. If it was not in the water,
not
on Shabbos. The whole thing is mukta on Shabbos anyway. Okay, if it was in the water before. If it was not in the water before, you can't stick it.
No one from the Baitar has 3 kids from the Baitar in the whole school.
No,
not an answer. I'm already. Okay. Cloud with Yontim, if it was in water before, you can stick it back. If not, not. Okay? Good. Yeah.
When we buy the Arava, would you suggest getting 2 packs of them?
I would suggest getting 1 pack, and then you go to Shul on Chol HaMoed. There are always people selling around. Okay, you can buy 2 packs at the beginning, so that's also going to go. You can. Some of the stuff they sell in the middle was really around from the beginning, and it's just back and back, and they keep it in the fridge. You can try. I don't know. Yeah.
Which side do they go on?
The Hadassim go on the right side. You're holding the lulav with the spine facing you, The Hadassim are on the right side. The Aravos are on the left. Three Hadassim, two Aravos. The Hadassim are slightly higher. They should be slightly higher than the Aravos. And that's how you do it. Ulav in the right hand. Asra like this. Yeah.
Why do you see that, like, sometimes people have, like, a whole bush and have, like, 100...
Yeah, Sfarim and Chassidim are very into Hadassim. but the mitzvah is you should take three. If you have a minute to take a lot, so then you follow your minute. Okay, it's extra. It's not necessary for the mitzvah. Okay.
Lefties.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Lefties uh-huh. switch?
Lefties, yeah. So, who here's a lefty? Oh, a lot of lefties.
The devil's work.
Not.
Great. So what do you guys normally do?
Swap. I truck it the other hand.
Okay.
What? What are you talking about? Could you put it in one hand?
What's that? You could hold them in one hand. But,
yeah, but on the other side. In the same hand.
Oh,
another
so
side.
Which hand do you do?
Yeah, the point of the matter is the lulav, you have three minim with the lulav, and the Ezra is only one min. And there's a right hand that's considered to be more chashuv.
So what do you
so, because it's a stronger hand. So you hold the three minim on the right side, and the Ezra on the left side. So if you're a lefty, so your stronger hand is the left hand, so you switch it.
I always keep it on the right.
You keep it on the right?
Yeah, I think
all right.
That's what I've been told.
Is what you've been told to do?
Yeah, but...
Is it pretty hard about this?
Lefties are always...
You're definitely
Yosef. Definitely Yosef.
You're exclusively lefty, or you're exclusively...
Okay. You can try it this way also. You know that when you pick up the Yesro, you pick up the Minim, so your Yotze Mitzvah right away. So how do you make the Bracha? We like to make Brachos over Las Yasam. So what do you do? So the normal thing is you pick up the Yesro upside down. You make the Bracha, then you flip it over. Now you're Yotze Mitzvah, and then you do the Na'anuim.
Are you not Yotze until you put them together?
They don't have to be touching each other. You just hold them. As long as you're holding them, you're fine. Okay? The Seder... Yeshikach, good luck, bye. And have a good rest of the day.